My Real Estate for Chisholm and Gayman. At home in Port Melbourne, Black Rock, Elwood and Mount Martha.
Good morning, Sam Gayman.
Good morning, Eddie.
How are you today?
Yeah, I'm brilliant. Fantastic. Full of life.
Mm-hmm.
Been a great week. Did a big fundraiser on Friday for the Elwood Primary at the St. Columbus Primary
Excellent.
School. Went really well.
No TK today.
Torsten is flat out. He is a listing machine at the moment. He's got a few great properties that are going to be coming up for spring and some really exciting stock.
Now, we had a look through the email and we got an email from David in Brighton.
Yep.
He's looking at selling his home, but he wants to go and buy a home as well. And he said, I haven't been to an auction in years, which made me think auction etiquette.
Yeah, okay, what, cool.
Yeah, if you haven't been to an auction in ages,
mm-hmm.
what is the correct procedure? What do you have to do? What do you do at an auction, apart from bid?
Yeah, and, hope and from an agent's point of view, we hope you bid enthusiastically.
Absolutely.
And frequently. Yes, so look, there's a number of things there for David to consider.
I've arrived at the auction an hour before, so yep. Let's take it from there.
Okay, let's take it from there. So first of all, you better go and get a coffee because most opens start half an hour before the auction.
Right, okay.
So there's a legal requirement that there are certain documents that need to be on display inside the house.
The vendor statement. Clearly
visible. The vendor statement is one of them. The auction rules are another.
Oh, okay.
So there's a list of auction rules that are provided by the Real Estate Institute and they need to be on display.
What are some of those rules?
Some of those rules are, well, here's a good one about auction etiquette. You're not allowed to interrupt the auction.
Oh, okay.
So in other words, you're not allowed to deliberately disrupt an auction.
Right.
So that's the key.
But what if you spot – now, here's something for you. I was at an auction a few years back in the eastern suburbs. The auctioneer was auctioning a property and he said that property was in a particular high school zone, which I knew – to be incorrect. Now, I didn't say a word,
yes.
But have I been in the right to turn around to the auctioneer and say, excuse me, I'm sorry, you're wrong, it's not?
Yeah, and I think that is a valid interruption.
Yes.
And you are entitled to ask questions. The auctioneer can decide whether or not they send over a colleague to have that conversation privately,
yes,
or whether they choose to answer that to everybody. Effectively, you know, you're the person who's asked the question, so you're the one that wants the answer.
Yes.
The disruption really is if you were yelling things out at the auction,
yep.
If you were trying to put off other bidders, if you were, you know, trying to bully somebody, you know, those sorts of tactics. Now, it doesn't really happen at auctions. I mean, it's very, very infrequent.
Mm.
But really, it's if you were, and, you know, if you were being antagonistic by asking 20 questions in a row, that would be different to if you had a valid question that you were asking that relates to the property and certainly something that may have been incorrect.
Sure.
Yeah. So really, that's the main reason is that, you know, every vendor should have a fair opportunity to be represented in the marketplace, to have their property on the market without people unfairly antagonizing or disrupting other bidders.
Sure. What's another auction rule?
Another auction rule is that you can't have a dummy bid.
Oh, that was outlawed a few years ago now.
It certainly was, and the only bidding that can be made on behalf of the vendor is a vendor bid. So yep. one of the rules that is read out by the auctioneer at the start of the auction is that the vendor may have a vendor bid and that the auctioneer makes that vendor bid.
How many vendor bids are permitted?
Good question, and David's probably wondering that. You are entitled as the auctioneer to make as many vendor bids as you like. However, most auctioneers will make one or two.
Right.
So there's nothing in the law that says that we need to put in just one or two.
Mm.
It's just that really it becomes a bit farcical and a bit silly if the auctioneer is standing there going, I'm going to place a vendor bid at 500,000, calling it once, twice, three calls, and then I'm going to place a vendor bid at 510.
Mm.
No further bidding. Okay, I'll place another vendor bid at 520. And another vendor bid at 5:30,
but then
everybody's going to think, what is he doing?
Absolutely, and that shows the hand of the vendor too, if you're going to do that.
Yeah, well, the vendor bid is designed as a starting point. It's to get the auction going. It's because often people are a little bit shy at the start. They're nervous. They do retreat. And often they're waiting for someone else to bid. You know, it's that human nature thing of like, oh, I'll wait till that other someone else shows their hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is My Real Estate. We'll be back in a tick.
My Real Estate for Chisholm and Gayman at home in Port Melbourne, Black Rock, Elwood and Mount Martha.
This is My Real Estate, all thanks to Chisholm and Gayman. We know Bayside. 9531 1245 is the one central number to call. 9531 1245 for all your real estate needs, whether they be residential or commercial, property management or sales. 9531 1245. If you're calling from interstate, just pop an 03 in front of that number. If you're calling internationally, then it's 61 for the country code, 3 for Victoria, 9531 1245. Four offices. Where are they, Sammy?
Eddie, they are Black Rock, Elwood, Mount Martha and Port Melbourne.
We're talking auction etiquette today. Sammy.
Eddie, yes, I love talking about auctions. As you know, I'm an auctioneer and have been since 2002. So yes, certainly close to my heart. We were talking about some of the auction rules. We touched on dummy bidding. And I think just to finish on that, so the vendor is allowed to have the auctioneer place a vendor bid on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
You are not allowed to have somebody in the crowd bidding for the vendor illegitimately.
To artificially inflate the price.
Correct.
Yes.
So that's certainly against the law, and there are hefty fines for anybody who would partake in that sort of misleading conduct.
Mm.
Now, in terms of vendor bids, we talked about it. There is no limit to the amount of vendor bids, but most auctioneers will only use one or two. And we just did touch on the fact that the vendor bid is designed as a starting point, because often when the auctioneer says, "Who'd like to make an opening bid?" we're falling deaf ears.
Exactly. Everybody's quiet.
Everyone's quiet. And that's when, we go, "Oh, isn't it a quiet street?"
It's a case of people looking at each other going, "You go first." "No, you go first." "No, you go first." You know what I mean? It's just nobody wants to go first.
Exactly. And it's that human nature. Everybody waits for somebody to make the first move. And look, sometimes we get a great opening bid, but often we have to start the auction. So the vendor bid is usually placed somewhere around the bottom end of the value in order to get things going, to encourage people to come in with a bid. So that's really the first starting point. From there, either two things will happen. The auctioneer will receive some bidding from the crowd.
Yes.
Or they will offer the crowd an opportunity to have the first right to buy the property at the vendor's reserve price.
It's called the first right of refusal. It's always very important to make a bid, because if you're the only bidder at the auction, you are the only person who's allowed to negotiate with the landlord once the hammer falls.
That's exactly right, Eddie. It's
with the vendor. Landlord. See, I've fallen back into
you've gone back into your property management years.
Yes, with the vendor. You're the only person who's allowed to negotiate with the vendor once that hammer falls.
That's exactly right. And in that circumstance, there are other people that can be in the crowd who sometimes have let nerves get the better of them,
yep,
or a little voice of reason has kicked in, and so they hold back.
Yeah.
And later on, they often regret that. And there's a lot of times when you hear "should have," "would have," "could have," or they ring you the next day and they say, "Look, we've changed our mind. We'd like to, come and put in an offer." And you say, "Well, actually, the person who had that first right at the vendor's reserve price came inside and bought the home."
Yeah.
And often people do look back with regret. So it's important that you put yourself in the driver's seat. You are entitled, if you're not prepared to pay that reserve price, you're entitled to make an offer. You do run the risk, though, that the vendor says to the agent,
"No."
"No," and go out and speak to the people that are waiting outside. Or go back through the file and ring through the file and see if you can get a better offer.
So as long as you've been the first person to be able to negotiate with the vendor,
yes,
if the vendor then says no, then it's open slather again?
That's right. It's open slather again.
Yeah.
So as soon as the purchaser, intending purchaser, says no to that offer of the reserve price, they are running the risk that it is open slather.
Mm.
Now, often common sense prevails here, and there might be some negotiation that takes place.
Yes.
Obviously the vendor is a motivated seller. They've gone to auction. They've advertised the property. Everybody wants to get to an outcome. But, there are times where, a vendor and an agent believe a property is going to achieve a certain price, and sometimes that might come later on that day or the next day or the following week. I had one recently that passed in at $990,000.
Yes.
The buyer came in to negotiate. They had the first opportunity, the vendor's reserve price. We offered that property to them.
What was the reserve, if I may ask?
Yeah, we offered it to them at $1,050,000. They said that they would offer $1 million, no more. Later on that afternoon, somebody else came back that had seen the property but not attended the auction, and they offered $1,030,000. They moved up to $1,040,000 and the vendor agreed.
So it all worked out in the end.
It all works out. But I guess the story there for the buyer is sometimes you don't know what's coming.
Sure.
So you don't want to be too conservative necessarily at that point. Sometimes that's the time to take the driver's seat if you see fair value.
This is My Real Estate. Back shortly.
My Real Estate for Chisholm and Gayman at home in Port Melbourne, Blackrock, Elwood and Mount Martha.
My Real Estate continues. Now, looking down at David's email here, Sammy, he's mentioned the D word, deposit. How much of a deposit is ordinarily required?
Yes, David, happy to answer that question. The standard deposit is 10% of the purchase price.
So we're talking $1 million property, you need $100,000.
Yes, that's correct.
Right.
Now, typically, you would bring that in the form of a personal check or a bank check, and you would make out that $100,000 to the agent's trust account. So
yes.
If you bought a property from Chisholm and Gayman, it would be the Chisholm and Gayman trust account.
Something important to remember as well, that a real estate trust account does not earn interest. It's a place simply to park your money, because by law, that trust account is not allowed to earn any interest.
Yeah, that's correct. So often people think the agent is the one that may be receiving interest. That's
absolutely,
that's absolutely not correct. Now, just on this issue with deposit. So some people will say, I don't have a checkbook. In the event you don't have a checkbook, there are a few options that are available to you, and you really should try and pre-negotiate with this with the agent ahead of the auction.
And your bank if you're going to do a direct deposit.
And the bank.
Mm.
So if you're going to do a direct deposit into the trust account, it can't be done via net banking. Most banks, you know, have a daily limit.
Yes.
And some banks, I think Westpac, for example, it's like a $10,000 limit, CBA, more flexibility. It depends on the bank.
Yes.
So what you need to do is you need to actually have approval from your bank to increase that limit so you have the capacity to be able to do a larger amount. Now,
yes.
If you can't, let's, on the example of $100,000 for a $1 million property, 10% deposit, that $100,000, if that still exceeds your daily limit and the bank says, look, we'll only allow you to transfer $50,000, what you would need to do is say to the agent, would the vendor be agreeable to me transferring $50,000 on the day of the auction and paying the balance of the deposit on Monday? Now, some vendors will agree to that, some won't, but it all needs to be pre-negotiated. The other aspect is that, you know, somebody may say, look, I can come with a bank check or a counter check that I can arrange with my bank, but I don't know at what price the hammer's going to fall. Is it going to sell for $1 million or is it going to sell for $1,050,000?
Yeah. Is it going to sell for $900,000?
Is it going to sell for $900,000? So from that perspective, what you would do is pre-arrange a set amount that's agreeable to the vendor, and you'd normally say, okay, well, if they're telling me it's roughly $1 million property, let's assume it's roughly $100,000. So I'll ask the agent, can I bring a bank check for $100,000?
So would David have to pre-register at the auction then?
Yeah, so Eddie, David doesn't need to pre-register at the auction in Victoria. Now, there are some states where he will. If he was bidding in Sydney, for example, there is a registration process.
Yes.
In Victoria, he doesn't need to register. But if he is the one bidding and he's successful, he and his name is going on the contract, whoever's name is going on the contract has to be the one that is there present and signing.
Yes.
And the other thing that David should really be talking to the agent about is what are the preferred settlement terms for the vendor.
In other 30, way, 60, 90, 120.
Yeah, and it'll depend on the circumstances of the vendor. You know, sometimes they've bought another property, so they need to marry a settlement. It might be a set date. It could be
the domino effect.
The domino effect.
Yeah,
absolutely. So in effect, you're not really registering by doing that, but it is important if you are very keen on a property that you do say to the agent, you don't have to register to bid, but you should register your interest in the property by saying to the agent, if anybody makes an offer, I would like to be kept informed.
Sure.
Because what you don't want is to find out that a big offer came in and the vendor said, yes, I'm keen to sell it before auction, and then David finds out that he didn't get a call from the agent.
Yeah.
Now
the knockout bid.
Yeah, and a professional agent, there's no obligation to go back to all the buyers, but a professional agent should make sure that they leave no stone unturned, and they should ring the file of people that have come through or SMS them if they can't reach them on the phone to say, we do have an offer. We're about to sell the property. The vendor would like to sell. If you are interested, we need to hear from you by a certain time frame. Give people an opportunity. But there is no obligation, and if David hasn't registered his interest, there is a risk that he doesn't get notified.
Sure. David, thank you for your question. That's where we have to leave it for this week. We'll do it all again next week.
Look forward to it, Eddie. Great show.
This has been My Real Estate.
Wherever you go, say hello.
1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy.